The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Brian, Judge Ross, Judge Bjorkman, the Honorable Judge Jeffrey M. Brian presiding. Case number A20-0499, State of Minnesota, Respondent versus Grishonda Michelle Phillips, Defendant and Midwest Bonding LLC Appellant.
Morning, Mr. McGinney. Before we begin, I'd like to make sure you can hear me. Can you hear me okay?
Good morning. Yes, I can.
And let me turn to my colleagues, Judge Bjorkman.
Good morning.
And
good morning, Judge Ross. I hear you fine.
And Judge Ross.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. I can hear you as well.
All right. And are you able to see the timer on your screen?
I am.
Great. Thank you again for being willing to participate in these remote arguments. And while we hope there won't be any interruptions, if there are, we will have patience with you, if you'll have patience with us as well. And with that, you can go ahead and begin your argument.
Well, thank you and good morning. And we also appreciate being able to appear remotely. So thank you for that. So my name is Jim McGinney, for the record, M-C capital G-E-E-N-E-Y. I represent the appellant, Midwest Bonding LLC, in this matter that's before the court, appealing an order from the district court imposing a 50% penalty on the reinstatement and discharge of a $75,000 bail bond in this case. I won't take this court's time in going through the facts of the case. They're not in dispute, and there's been no response by the state of Minnesota through the Hennepin County Attorney's Office. I would like to point out some important facts, though, and our main points of argument to this court why the district court abused her discretion in imposing such a draconian penalty on my client. This is a case where the defendant absconded on a bail bond posted by Midwest and was at large for about 12 months. The district court made a finding that weighed heavily against reinstatement and discharge of the bond. I'd just like to address that briefly. While I appreciate 12 months seems like a long time for a defendant to be absent, there's really no special circumstances in this case why a 12-month absence deserves a 50% penalty, where a 7-month absence, as in Askland, resulted in reinstatement of a bond. For that matter, a 3-month absence, where this court has reinstated and discharged bonds for defendants absent for several months at a time.
But in those cases, what's the standard of review?
The standard of review is abuse of discretion. It remains the abuse of discretion. And
right. Isn't it possible that that a panel of the Court of Appeals or the Supreme Court could look at, you know, different outcomes, 7 months, 12 months, and say with different results that neither was abuse of discretion?
That's certainly possible. But we think in this circumstance, the district court misapplied the law on Schatzky, and that's one of the standards for abuse of discretion is misapplication of the law. And I'm prepared to address that point as well, but I would like to point out briefly the differences in the unpublished opinion White, which the district court relied on, which actually I argued before this court late last year. And this court reversed the district court in White. While there is a finding that White's 13-month absence weighed against reinstatement, the factors from White are different. The court in White made specific findings about White's efforts to avoid prosecution. Here, what we do know of what's in the record is that Ms. Phillips was absent. I think it's a female, Grishonda. I'm assuming that's a female name. She was absent from the jurisdiction for 12 months, but there's no specific facts in this case to indicate what she was doing and why she was gone, where Mr. White, there was lots of information in the record about his efforts to avoid apprehension. So I think White's distinguishable. It's also an unpublished decision. But let me get to the heart of our argument, where we believe the district court erred in its application of the law from Schatzky, is the second factor. The district court makes a finding that the willfulness of the defendant weighed heavily against reinstatement. And the court kind of refers to that also in paragraph 5 of her order, where she said the appellant didn't meet their burden to establish reinstatement of the entire bond would be just. And I think the district court didn't didn't take into account appellant's unrefuted affidavit. And I am going to go through some of those efforts Midwest made because the Supreme Court.
But counsel, before you go through those facts, I mean, as I understand the district court's order, the district court made findings on all of the Shetsky factors. In fact, finding two of them weighed in favor of reinstating the bond.
Correct.
And yet, you know, it's hard to say factor two is all about the defendant's willful conduct. And there's no, I appreciate your client's efforts after the fact, and frankly, before the sentencing hearing to ensure her attendance at the hearing. But the factor of that is measured by the defendant's absence. I mean, how can we conclude that the district court erred as a matter of law in concluding that that factor weighs against reinstatement?
Well, I think the Supreme Court addressed that in State v. Storkamp, and that's cited in my brief. And Storkamp, the court discussed the fact that prior to that decision, many district courts were just not even acknowledging the efforts being made by the surety in apprehending defendants and finding that because the defendant's absence was willful, that factor automatically weighed against reinstatement and discharge. And the Supreme Court in Storkamp, I think the exact language was, we never meant this factor to be a surety's good faith efforts. And that's where I think this case is distinguishable, because Midwest efforts, and they're in our affidavit, were above and beyond many of the surety's efforts in many cases. Midwest made it's outlined in paragraphs 10 through 12 of the affidavit that's in the record, but they had boots on the ground. They were actively searching for this defendant, not only in Minnesota, but in Wisconsin, where they were limited, and it's in the affidavit about their, and it's in the order about their ability to bounty hunt, lack of a better term. I hate to use the word bounty hunt, but I think that's the most recognizable term. Fugitive recovery agents are prohibited from operating in Wisconsin, and yet Midwest agents did all they could to try to locate Ms. Phillips, shared their information with law enforcement multiple times, conducted multiple surveillances. I mean, these were extensive efforts, and it's our argument today, and it's the crux of my argument, Judge Borkman, that these efforts outweigh the willfulness of Phillips's failure. And I think
so, in a sense, you're arguing that when you have a mixed, you know, when the Shetsky factors go both ways, some factors favor reinstatement, others don't, that it's an abuse of discretion not to reinstate the entire bond. Is that basically your argument?
I think it's an abuse of discretion to impose a $37,500 penalty with no rationale about why a 50% penalty is discretionary in this case. What's the basis for that penalty? Think about Rule 702 of the General Rules of Practice. If you don't file a petition within 6 months of an order, you are imposed a 10% penalty. 3 months. And then it's a 6-month timeline for filing a petition. So there doesn't seem to be any rationale or basis. The number seems to come out of thin air. 50% of the bond is penalty. The Supreme Court in Shetsky made it clear that the primary purpose of bail is not to punish the surety and not to increase revenue of the state. It's our argument that a 50% penalty on a $75,000 bail bond is arbitrary and there's no basis for it. It's a punishment and it's increasing the revenue of the state on these facts.
So what would have been within the district court's discretion as you see?
In my experience doing bail bond arguments throughout the state, we see a 10% penalty kind of standard when someone's absent from the jurisdiction, comes back to court and the case is resolved when the surety does not apprehend the defendant. I'll concede we didn't apprehend this defendant. We couldn't. It was impossible. But not a 50%. Mr. McGreeny, if I could. Certainly.
Jump in. Aside from your own experience and what you see as common, what would we cite as the basis for holding that the district court abuses discretion?
I think the amount of the penalty is not proportional to the facts of this case, where there's no prejudice to the state, The defendant's been sentenced and the case is closed. There's no opposition from the state to the petition for the bail bond. And the general rules of practice in criminal courts are that the statutory penalty that's mandatory when a surety doesn't comply with Rule 702 is 10%. So here—
So what would our, assume that we agree with you and that we're gonna issue a published opinion and establish a guideline for the district court as to the range of discretion, the limit to the range. Articulate the holding for us that we would advise as to how we would advise the district court.
I think that the holding should say that in a case where there's no prejudice to the state and extensive efforts by a surety to attempt to locate and apprehend a offender who's absconded and the case has been resolved, in other words, the defendant's been sentenced and the case is closed, that a penalty in the area of the statutory penalty of 10% is more appropriate and is within the discretion of the court. But to without further support for the amount of the penalty, in other words, what supports in this case a $37,000 penalty, where if the bail bond was $10,000 on this case, the penalty likely would have been $5,000 because it seems to be a percentage, half the bond. That's where the discretion is abused. And a large, rather than consider the amount of the penalty, $37,000, I think the district court is using a percentage, 50%. And I think that this court could find that a discretionary penalty in the 10% range on these kinds of facts. Again, you know, this court issues opinions all the time based on these facts. And I think the facts of this case—
Well, just so I'm clear, you've said why a 10% penalty would be within the court's discretion. Correct. I'm trying to get a sense of what we would say as the basis for holding that a 50% penalty would be an abuse of discretion. How would we articulate that holding?
Because a penalty of that range is merely to punish the surety and increase the revenue of the state. And the Supreme Court has already said that that's not the purpose of bail. So it's an abuse of discretion because it's unusually large and it doesn't serve any purpose other than to punish the surety and increase the revenue of the state. It's not rationally related to the facts of the case.
So if a court looks at the different factors and says half of them weigh in favor of discharge and half weigh against, is it abuse of discretion to do as the district court did here with just half of the, or with a portion? I shouldn't say half, but is it abuse of discretion to only discharge a portion?
Well, let me be clear about our argument before I answer your question. I will answer it. I disagree that half the factors weigh against us. I think that second factor weighs in favor of reinstatement.
No, but I'm asking because it as we contemplate whether we should publish in.
I see.
Articulate some new rule about the sliding scale of discretion versus payment and how much of a portion, you know, where does a district court abuse its discretion when it's doing just a portion? I wanted to ask you, is it tied to the factors or is there some other means by which a district court should exercise that discretion, instead of factor by factor, is there some other way that it would determine or justify a partial discharge?
I think that the penalty imposed by district court judges on bail bonds that where a defendant fails to appear, the amount of the penalty should be rationally related somehow to the facts of the case, rather than be an arbitrary percentage of the bond, because that tends to punish the sureties who are posting larger bonds, they're incurring larger penalties if you apply a percentage test. How you come up with that number, I think, is factually distinguishable on the facts of each case. What if the bond company or the surety puts in great efforts to attempt and assist in locating a defendant, I think that proportionally should lower the amount of penalty, if any penalty at all should be imposed. Where if the defendant never appears or still remains at large, and there's no explanation or no lawful reason for the surety to come in and argue that that bond should be discharged, then the amount of penalty up until the entire bond would make more sense. So I think it should be related to the facts of the case rather than just an arbitrary, what appears to be an arbitrary number. I don't know what the district court thought here, whether the district court said, well, half the factors weigh against reinstatement, I'm going to forfeit half the bond. That would appear to be maybe the rationale. I don't know, though. But I think it needs to be more related to the facts of the case, the amount of the bond, and be fairer. This seems to be unfair. And that's a tough argument to make on abuse of discretion, but it seems to be unfairly disproportionate to the facts of this case, this large penalty, especially when one of the factors in our argument, the judge is incorrect about that factor weighing heavily against reinstatement when you apply the holding from Storkamp to that factor. The Storkamp court was clear that it would disincentivize sureties to go out and search for people if they're going to face a $37,000 penalty when they come back, if they do. So I'm out of time. I don't know if I get 5 minutes rebuttal, but I'm happy to answer any questions or address any issues that anybody has.
Only if it's real rebuttal.
I know, that's what I mean. I don't think so. So I appreciate the court's time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll take the matter under advisement and issue an order within the statutory timeframe.
Everybody have a safe day. Thank you.